World War II against the Japanese. In what branch of the service did you participate?
I was in the U.S. Navy, and I was a member of the Special Forces team, and initially in Southeast Asia, and then later in Central Pacific.
What was your rank, and what type of job did you do in the war?
Well, let's see. The rank first. I went in the Navy as an ensign on a volunteer basis and came out a commander. As to the job, the Special Forces were originally formed in 42 to accomplish, I guess you would call it, unusual jobs that required special training and special team training. In other words, you couldn't very well break up the team because of the select capabilities and unique qualities of each of the individuals on the team. Of course, the one way, good way of breaking them up is if they got killed, then you had to replace them. In a little more detail, you could refer to it as guerrilla warfare, and those Americans who fought with and led some of the natives in the Pacific Ocean areas. My specialty was explosives and also how to construct explosives from raw materials, and a little bit of sprinkling of dynamite here and there never helped.
Did you feel that the training you had made you ready for the problems you faced?
In broad outlines, yes. I think the main thrust of the training was how to stay alive, which is important to all of us, and also the discipline that you had to accept and live with day in and day out in order to stay alive. I think certainly I never met anyone in that line of work that was willing to admit that they had all the training they could get or could handle or knew everything about the job. It just didn't work out that way because every job was different. Every single job was different. But the underlying fact that you had the discipline, in some cases, to keep on going when you were so tired you couldn't move, in some cases, or a discipline to win if you felt like just giving up and saying the hell with it. I think the training certainly helped in that respect.
The tactics they did you use the tactics they taught you when you were in the war?
Since the area of warfare that we were at that time specializing in and more or less being the groundbreakers for, you had to think up, in most cases, your own tactics. Everything that they would explain to you before a job sometimes simply didn't turn out that way. Mostly, I think, because the Americans had a lack of intelligence about a lot of the islands and about a lot of the areas that we were in. They would have, for instance, a hill designated on a map maybe at 600 feet elevation. And by the time you got to that particular hill, you found out it was 6 feet and not 600. So you had to go on your own initiative in most cases, but the tactics as to how to defend yourself and take advantage of your opponent were certainly exercised.
What raids and invasions did you participate in?
Well, the first, they wouldn't be, they would just wouldn't be a big raid, they'd be a series, perhaps, of small ones, all leading up to a major operation. And I went back as far when I was very young and handsome, and in the Battle of Solomon Islands. And we participated there in the 1st Recon Battalion. And that was the really makings of the group as it evolved in the Southwest Pacific. And then as it got more competent, it was given tougher jobs to do. And some would consist of perhaps 10 men, perhaps 100. It would depend upon the job that had to be done. We were never in any pitched battles, like you used to see, like you see in the movies. We were more intelligence gatherers, and trying to give good advice before an operation took place. For instance, in the Philippines, I was on the island of Samar, which is the large mountainous island between Leyte and the Northern Islands. I was there about 10 months before the Americans came in. And the information that we got out, we constantly moved, obviously. And the information we got out was very valuable because it gave the pretty exact location of most of the pillboxes and bunkers that were on the beach, on the Lingayen beaches, and on the Leyte beaches, especially in the Leyte beaches where that's L-E-Y-T-E, near Lingayen, near the Tacloban. The Americans came in there and practically walked in. You probably heard the story about MacArthur. He would come in off the small boat, the LCVP, and wading in. Well, he really didn't have to do that because that beach was so dry. You could have taken an LST up there and never touched water. But it looked good for the American newspapers, I suppose. If he wanted to get wet, that was his business. But we had those pretty well lined up, so the American destroyers came in very close and really blew it to hell. Well, the we spent, the group I was with spent about, on two occasions, spent about a year and a half in the Philippines. The next major job, we went down to Borneo, and with the Dutch and the Australians, worked Borneo and Sumatra. And we then came out and went into rest camp, and about 4 months later, I guess, we started to practice in for Okinawa, and that was our last big job, was Okinawa. Well, there were small ones in between. When I was very young, I guess, and new at the job, I volunteered for an extra hazardous job, which turned out to be Tuara, and luckily I got through that. But I would guess that Okinawa was my last big job. Then we came back to prepare for the invasion of Japan. We came back to Hawaii.
What was your most hectic moment?
Well, let's see. My most hectic moment is when I stole an Army Jeep, painted it green, and drove it for a week and a half in the town of Lingayen in Leyte Islands. But I guess my most hectic was the Karamoretto operation, which was done in conjunction with the Army Rangers. They were a series of islands. Karamoretto was a series of islands just on the China Sea side of Okinawa. And we had to take those islands before the main invasion began because the Japanese had many suicide boats hit up in the hills and the tunnels. And they would bring them down on little railroad tracks and go after the ships. So our job was to make sure that they were all neutralized, which really meant blowing them up. And we had to do that. We were given 1 week to do it, and we accomplished it in about 4 days. That was on one of the operations that Ernie Pyle, who was a famous reporter in World War II, who was killed on one of those operations.
What was your most remembered moment in the war?
Well, I think it was when the war came to an end in the Pacific. At the time, I happened to be in Pearl Harbor and also in rest camp in the Hawaiian Hotel, Royal Hawaiian Hotel in Waikiki Beach. And that night, when the official news came out that the Japanese had surrendered, I never saw so many live so much live ammunition fired in my life in the air. Luckily, nobody was killed. A lot of the guys that were firing the bigger stuff were doing it without their officers' permission. And of course, let's say if they didn't fire it out at sea, there was a chance of some of that steel coming down hitting people in the head. Luckily, nothing like that happened. Most of it was fired out at sea, but the whole sky was lit up with live ammunition, and I'll always remember that.
Could you describe the food that you ate during the war?
In broad terms, it was horrible. But in day-to-day, it managed to get you through. Most of it obviously came out of the can. I guess the one thing I'll always remember is every time we would get near some place that had fresh meat, it would be Australian lamb coming out of the refrigerator. I got to the point that I could never look at a sheep. I just hated lamb. Today, I can't afford to buy lamb, but in those days it was very, very cheap. And of course, it was close to Australia, and Australia didn't have much beef, but they didn't have an awful lot of sheep. And they really pushed that lamb. But I think I never saw greens, never saw the lettuce and tomatoes, things you're used to seeing in salad, and no milk, obviously, unless you had, you were a guest someplace at a base and they had a little milk made with water, and that's pretty good, always tastes pretty good. But we ate enough that, we always had enough to eat that we didn't starve.
What would
you, a lot of weight, but didn't starve.
What would you eat when you were on an island on an invasion or something?
Well, you mean the native food?
Yeah.
Well, depends upon what island you were on. And when we were in the Philippines, we ate pretty good because they had a lot of pigs. And one of the big treats there was this small piglet, which they would take a stick and roast him. They'd put it through slit his throat first and then sew that up after they drained the blood out, because they would boil the blood and drink it, which turned out to be pretty good. And then they would slit his belly and sew that up, take the entrails out, and they'd sew it up. They'd take a stick and put it through his front and come out his rear and put that on a barbecue and just get one of the little kids to turn it. And they would take turns, the kids would take turns, and they'd turn that thing for hours on end. And by the time it was eaten, it was delicious. For milking, or for drinking, why, we had always had coconuts. I got pretty adept at breaking the coconuts and drinking the milk and eating the meat. They call the white part of the coconut inside there. They call that the coconut meat. And that is very tasty. Can't drink it too much, but water, we would get it out of a stream, and you always had to boil it, of course, because of the threat of malaria. And a lot of us didn't get malaria while we were out there, but we got it when we came back. I, for instance, had malaria in 1946 in the Bethesda Naval Medical Hospital.
What was your most embarrassing moment?
Well, I can remember one vividly. I had gone aboard an AGC, which is an auxiliary communication ship, to pick up orders for my group, and where the orders and the plans for the next job were all printed and given to me to pass out to our small group of officers who would memorize them. And I was in a hurry because I was trying to get a small boat out of there, and I was really moving fast, and I was dressed in ungodly clothes because that's all I could get. But I was rounding the corner of the ship, and I really moved fast and knocked this man down, and I could see he was an elderly man, so I knew I was in real trouble, because the only elderly people out there were admirals. So I knocked him down, sure enough, was an admiral, and I picked him up, and I was apologizing all over the place, and I really meant it. I was sorry. And it was Admiral Byrd. The Admiral Byrd had gone to the North Pole. And, you know, gee, Admiral, I really am sorry, you know. And he finally patted me on the head and said, son, it could happen to anybody, and shoved me on my way.
What kind of recreation did you have during the war?
From time to time, depending upon where we would go to rest, there was always, well, recreation, there was always a poker game or a crap game going, constantly. But since I wasn't much of a gambler, I played a little poker once in a while. I couldn't get carried away, but when we would go to a rear area to rest, we'd play a lot of softball. We always had a game of softball going. You get the same game of softball going night or day. Actually, we played at night or near some of the airstrips. We always played volleyball. That was really where I saw volleyball introduced to a great extent. I think that's where a lot of people came away learning volleyball was from the South Pacific. And swimming. And of course with the swimming, you had to watch it because of the sharks. And you would have one guy on the lookout with binoculars and a couple with carbines to shoot at the sharks in case they came near you.
Did you know mistakes during the war?
I think everybody out there noted mistakes. And we learned from them from time to time, usually from job to job, especially those that you worked with. But we did make a lot of mistakes, I felt. But one reason that we beat the Japanese was because they must have made a lot more mistakes than we did.
Do you think wars accomplished anything?
That's a tough question. I'd have to say yes and no. Looking at history, certainly the Revolutionary War gave us our independence. The Civil War kept us together and made slaves into free men. Since then, I'm not too sure. I don't know whether wars have accomplished anything or not. Certainly, they have not accomplished anything that peace couldn't have done a much better job.
The country just ended up the same size it was.
Well, the United States, don't forget, is unique in that we have so many ethnic backgrounds that we all mix together. I'm not too sure that's bad. I think it's kind of good, in some respects anyway, because we certainly never wanted a peace with another country. And most of the wars in Europe were caused by somebody wanting a peace with another country. And we've never done that. Now, you could argue that in the Spanish Civil War, or the Spanish-American War, we took Cuba and we took the Philippines. but always with the aim of freeing them. And of course, we did.
Thank you very much for this interview.